This is Brad James, and you are watching Suave Sessions.
So, what was childhood like? What was growing up like?
Oh, wow. That's a very POV kind of question, you know? You know, because your experience is what you know it to be, right? You know, I don't know anyone else's childhood from a firsthand experience. So, for me, you know, my childhood experiences, I grew up in Augusta, Georgia. Which is a town.
I lived in Augusta when I was like five.
Okay.
Yeah. It was a very short-lived moment. My mom was like, "Nah, we're not doing this."
It ain't, you know. I was about to say it's known, you know, primarily for two things, which is James Brown and the Masters golf tournament.
Correct.
So, what it does have is some really good schools down there. And medical facilities.
Yeah.
But I grew up there in a I guess the transition time, you know, I was like I'm kind of an 80s kid. I grew up in the 80s and it was I was raised by my grandparents, and my grandfather is a retired from the army. My grandmother was a nurse and had transitioned into being a pastor over the years. So, you know, I spent a lot of time, you know, somewhere between a military and a church environment and learned a lot. It might have aided me years later when I got to work with Mr. Tyler Perry doing a sitcom for him, and you know, just understanding and being, you know, a part of what his audience was, you know, a lot of it was the lifestyle I grew up in, being in, you know, not necessarily a big city, but not necessarily the country either.
Right.
It was, you know, I it was definitely the preparation that, you know, that you don't know you need at the time.
Yeah.
We look at how things are done nowadays, and it's very different, but you know, I try to remind myself that we're preparing children for the world that they're entering, not the one that we enter.
I think a lot of more of us need that understanding, because you can't do it how it was done to us. That's not going to work now.
No,
it's not the same world. I mean, you'll go to jail. We made that threat. It wasn't really happening. Like now, you really will go to jail.
Yeah. Yeah.
I tried that once in the store. My mom was like, "Call him."
Yeah. So you know, my childhood was fun. You know, I had a lot of friends, and you know, we did all the stuff. You know, we played until the street lights. We I was really into, even as a kid, because they would come on the weekends, is the Kung Fu movies. I was really into the martial arts. One of my favorite movies of all time is The Last Dragon.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it was highly influential for me in a lot of what I ended up doing later in life.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was fun.
It's crazy. A lot of us were, well, not a lot of us, a group of my friends were talking about The Last Dragon about a week and a half ago. And I can tell the age difference in my friendships, because the one half was just like, "What are you talking about? This is not interesting." Yeah. The other half is like line for line. Better move your pizza to Daddy Green's pizza. Like it was just, we went in. The other side was like, "What are you talking about?"
Yeah.
So understood that fast. It's interesting. Your grandfather was in the military. You end up going into the Marines.
Yeah.
How did the Marines happen? Was that because of the influence of your grandfather?
I that was certainly at play. You know, it was, I was already prepared for it I grew up in a yes sir, no sir household. And so I think there was no fear, apprehension of it. It also wasn't my plan necessarily. But there was two factors at play. Number one, there was a, and I'll give you a short version of this story. This, when I was in high school, it was a time when you had pagers, but most people didn't have cell phones at the time. Like, if you had a cell phone, you were a doctor or a drug dealer.
Right.
And, and I paged this girl that I had met at school that day, and you had to be at home to get the call. So I'm sitting at home waiting on the call, and I answer, and I'm ready. You know, I had game even as a young cat. but on the other end of that call was a Marine recruiter, and I needed him to get off the line so I could get the call. But he asked me what I was doing after high school, and I had no idea.
Yeah.
And he offered me that endeavor and opportunity. And yeah, not that I jumped in right away, but that piqued my interest, and I kind of started looking around me. And in the town that I was from, there wasn't a ton of opportunities for the life that I knew that I wanted for myself. And what I did realize is that those that were there that were doing anything that to me made an impact or a difference in military experience. So while I didn't know what that does or how that prepares you, I figured that there was something there. There's something that I need to learn going through these experiences that's going to help me at my next stages in life. And that was essentially how I decided to go into a branch of the military, but the Marines in particular, because I was hard-headed and it was the hardest one.
Yeah. Marines, they say Marines go in first. So it's hardest boot camp. Because all I ever think of is Full Metal Jackets. And that was enough to like calm me down.
It was pretty accurate, too. It was, they did a good job. They did a
good job. I was like, I don't want to be there. But I'm taking it from the descriptions, like pager, no cell phone, Last Dragon, you're born somewhere between like 78, 81.
78.
Okay. Just putting that together. Because if you pay somebody and didn't have a cell phone, had to sit at home and a recruiter calling you, like that,
it's in that age range. She might jump on me, but my wife's in that movie too, which is, you know, it's very full circle.
It's very full circle. What's crazy is you go into
a couple other good friends of mine, but go ahead.
Were all of them in Full Metal Jackets?
Mm-mm.
Oh, The Last Dragon. Yeah, what was she? She was Bruce Leroy's little sister.
Yep. Yeah.
So those listening, y'all can, if you're of age, you know who his wife is at this point. So when you go into the military, I know the line they gave me, I graduated 2000. They were like, there's no wars coming up. I was like, bet. You're already in. So it's like, you know the truth of what's happening. Right. When you,
there's always,
being that you're a Marine. Yeah, there's always something. It may not be World War II, but there's always something.
Yeah.
When you're in here, and as a Marine, again, there is no sit at home kind of thing. Like, y'all are in the action. What is the mindset that gets you home after your tour?
So, you know, the military has its own language almost. You know, it's there's a lot of sayings, there's a lot of and I don't want to give them all away here.
No, that's a family thing that y'all have.
You know, what you learn later in life is that these are mantras, things that empower you. But there's a lot of statements, even when you're running, like when you're training with your unit. And your military?
No, I was ROTC. That's as far as I got.
So when you're in the military and you're training, when you're working in a unit, you do cadences, mm-hmm. right? And in those cadences, a lot of them are reinforcing of how powerful you are, you know, mm-hmm. how strong you are. So it's not just that there's this outside understanding that Marines are tough as nails. You're saying it as you're training over and over and over, you know. So
yeah.
By the time you get into a conflict, you're almost over prepared. So the Marines are the first ones in. It's the smallest unit of America's armed forces, mm-hmm. but it's essentially because they're not there to occupy the area; they're there to clear it.
Yeah.
So the Marines go in first. They clear the area. Army comes in. They set up camps and medical facilities and libraries and whatever else they're doing. And Marines go off and clear another area. You know, and then the Army comes in because they have, you know, a lot of people.
Yeah. You're gonna start a military fight on my page.
And that's why we're so grateful for the Army for their numbers.
Because they could set up libraries and hospitals. You know, tents.
My uncle and my grandfather go kill me for that one.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're gonna catch it from them. That absolutely uncle happens.
Navy, so he's
he really don't want any parts of that conversation. Like none. I have a family, I have a military family, so I know all the jokes. I was just like, yeah, I did ROTC, got that recruitment conversation. I was also in band, so I had band camp in August. Mm-hmm. Boot camp started in July. I was like, I got a scholarship and yeah. Band camp starts in August. So how are y'all gonna work around this? They was like, we don't work around people. I was like, like sign here. I was like,
you got the memo early. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Until later, you got it early. Yeah.
I found out. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and go to school. We're good.
Yeah. When they wanted me to come back and do, I did 4 years and pursued other things.
Yeah.
But you know that year that you're exiting, if they want you back, they start like re-recruiting you and getting you to sign up for stuff. And they offered me a promotion and you know, gave me a clue into what my next duty station would be. And I forget where it was, but what I remember is that it was cold weather training. And I said, I'm out.
I'm good.
Thank you. Good night.
Pass. Yeah. Yeah. Great time.
Yeah. This was fun.
Great parties. great parties. How do you go from military to acting? Like how did acting come into play at that point? Because again, assumed mindsets, let's say that. Assumed mindsets military is that like it's very life or death all the time. Like everyone thinks that you all think that way. How do you now transform yourself into an actor from the military mindset?
So, you know, just the word being an actor is one who acts. And a lot of times people think it's pretending to be something or someone else. But right. Pretending and acting are two different things. The reason they say action when you start working on a movie set is that's what you take. You take action. So it's doing and being. It's not imitating, you know. It's doing, performing to your best of your ability to act or take action.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I was always an artist, and I'm an artist who happened to go through the Marines and become that as well. But that, in addition to, you know, my own experiences and upbringing, they kind of, not kind of, they are directly transposed into my art, you know, on screen. And it's like that for a ton of actors across the board. It's that your unique set of circumstances are what you bring, your experiences that you bring to the role. Mm-hmm. And you know, in preparation for this one that's going to be released here real soon, I'm actually taking on new experiences because it's, you want to portray a historically accurate representation of someone who walked the face of this earth. So you have to invite their experiences into your life so that you can express that. But if you don't, yeah, then you'll be pretending, you know what I mean? Instead of acting.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the methodology of being a great actor, is understanding who the person is that you're portraying. Mm-hmm. Getting as deep into the knowledge of that person to where you understand what their reactions and actions would be, so that when you're portraying them, you can't really tell the difference of who this person is.
Yeah, it's the why. It's not knowing right. They say certain lines will tell you what to say, but being intimately familiar with someone will tell you why they say it.
Right. Right. Why you would say it, why you would do it, why you would protect this person. It's like it's the understanding of a person.
Yeah.
I love that.
Honestly, even in, you know, I know I'm jumping around here, but
not good.
Even in this particular role, from the original script that I got from, you know, our brilliant writer, John Ridley, after I was closer to Huey, mm-hmm, I questioned, would he even say this? Mm. Or are these words authentically the ones that would come from him? And yeah, that's part of the process, you know, is that understanding, because I've gotten, you know, more intimate with him necessarily than whoever might have written out the scenes.
Right.
But then you get to another point of understanding where you realize anything can come out of anybody's mouth. What's important is the why. So, you know, as you'll see, you know, when the movie is released, there's a pretty tense scene between Huey Newton and Shirley Chisholm that happens at Diane Carroll's residence for a meeting that she set up. And in that scene, Huey actually says things that he doesn't believe, but he's testing Shirley Chisholm to see where she's at. So it's the, right, it's not just what he put on the paper. And this is what you get when you work with somebody that's an Oscar award winning, brilliant writer.
Right.
I'm not just saying words on the page or agreeing or disagreeing. This is how it happened. Let's find out why. And that's what I got to, you know, explore in these moments was the reasons why we were moving the way we move.
That's interesting. What is something that you found out during the process of doing the background on Huey Newton that you didn't know beforehand? Because a lot of us, we have this perception that we know people, mm-hmm, but a lot of us don't really study the person. It's like we know tidbits here and there, and there's a lot of background and a lot of nuances that we don't understand or don't know about.
Yeah. There's honestly, there's been so much time since between I started delving into Huey to we wrapped production, and then, you know, also getting back to me, mm-hmm, that it's hard for me to even remember what I didn't know. I spent time with them, respect. Yeah. I think two things that stand out for me that I know I didn't have an understanding of before was how influential Huey, outside of the Black Panther Party, but just his bravado was, and the way it carried over, the way I can look at other people. I can look at how Michael Evans was played on Good Times and see Huey. You know what I mean? Like in the performance and in the bravado. Regina King did a highly acclaimed show called Boondocks.
Yeah.
And there was a character on there named Huey, who you know, played no games. Again, that same bravado. But the other thing I learned through this process and reading his writings, which, you know, is an intimate thing because you're just there with your medium, putting your thoughts down on paper to yourself. I read about him talking about going to see a movie with Melvin Van Peebles that he made, Sweet Badass. And I guess the correlation is, you know, that Mario Van Peebles is a good friend of mine, who was Melvin's son.
Right, his son.
We played father and son on a series called Superstition a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been, you know, a great mentor of mine. And to see, you know, how close the layers are, you know, like right there. Mario just released a movie here recently, phenomenal Western, you know, we got to go out and see.
Mm-hmm.
But I need to catch up with him and talk to him about that. Like, Melvin and Huey hung out. Did you get to hang out? But he's got such a grounded, deeply inserted view of, you know, humanity and being for the people. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Being for the people is just a different vibe than being for any one organization. And, you know, we talk about, like, you know, the Black Panther Party for the people. It's like, you know, that for the people part is where a lot of people kind of fall off from it or maybe haven't grasped onto it. But it's really about all the people.
Yeah. I mean, it's a movement that I think was short-lived in perspective. But the impact of it and the philosophies behind it were so much, I think, before their time. Because there's a lot of differences between the Civil Rights Movement and the Black Panther Movement.
Absolutely.
And for them to be that close in time, I don't think the people that were in the Civil Rights Movement were prepared for what the Black Panthers wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think enough people understood the power that the Black Panthers had to want to join in that movement. So it's just, it's in that time frame where it's so tricky.
There were different whys. There were different reasons why, and different, you know, results that were wanted. And so different methodologies are going to be used. Even, being frank, even by calling it the Civil Rights Movement rather than a Black movement or for the people movement or whatever, first implies that you're going to be civil.
Right.
And the Black Panther Party didn't make that promise that we're going to be civil about it.
Yeah.
Not that they weren't going to be. It's just that that's not the promise that we're making. We're not saying it's us being civil in the fight for our rights.
Right. If it goes there, we can meet you there. It's. Yeah, absolutely. When you go into these characters, because even your character, Cameron, in the House Divided, you go from when you go from these heavy characters, how do you come out of that? Because a lot of people don't understand that it takes a lot to get there, but then it can also potentially take a lot to get away from that as well. So how do you break these characters?
So what's funny is, and that's why it becomes so important, you know, which roles you decide to take and which ones you don't. Because everything, and this is something Mario taught me, is that whatever you put your spirit or your body into doing, like those cells, the cells of your body that come together that make you who you are, don't know. You know, he told me this during I was getting tortured on the show on Superstition. My character was getting tortured. And he said, you know, take these breaks in between. You don't have to really be tortured or feel tortured in order to make this happen, because your body doesn't know the difference. And he, you know, explained to me this whole experience about this film that he did where he was playing sick. He was perfectly healthy when he did the film. He was sick for over a month after. You know, your body doesn't
know. Yeah.
So in a film like this, that's a biopic that you want to, there's a certain reverence and respect for these characters. And for me, just a personal attachment to Huey as well. Yet you got to do it right. So you do want to get entrenched, ingrained. You want to make it a part of you so that you can make the right, not the right, so that you can make decisions that feel right.
Right.
But in other roles, there is different methodology. So even for Cameron Sanders, the storyline with House Divided, I left to the trust of the, you know, one of the directors and the writer of the show, Dan Garcia. I left that to him. I didn't read the scripts outside of my parts. I didn't want to know whatever Cameron wasn't supposed to know, and even what was going on in his life, I didn't try to take that on in a methodology kind of way, like to ingrain it in me and me be him and us be one. It that approach wasn't taken with that particular character because I didn't want to take him home with me.
Makes sense.
Yeah. I literally, and I don't advise this for young actors coming in, but I literally showed up to set. Okay, what are the sides? In other words, what's going on? They give me the lines, and while they're setting up the cameras, I learn it. We do it, and then it's in my short-term memory. Like I leave it there. And first, you know, for the setup and the scheduling and everything that we had to do to make sure that we were giving our audiences, you know, some juicy, high-quality content. It worked out really well, and people were really attached to it, and I would have to go back and watch it to see what's going on, because we're shooting out of order. Like, I don't know what's going on. I'm watching the show like everybody else, like, what? Oh, that's crazy, you know?
So, and it's I think it's interesting, and I've never heard anyone do that before. Like, you're so literally when you're on camera and you look shocked, it's because you're actually shocked. Like, you have no idea this is happening.
First time. So what?
Like, I wouldn't, it changes the whole dynamics of that.
And I will shout out Tyler Perry and Mark Swinton for that in particular, just because of how fast we had to move.
Yeah.
What that did to my short-term memory to enable me to be able to pull that out of the tool belt when I need it.
Yeah.
You know, so if I want to play a character that I don't want to ingrain or take home with me, that I can just play the emotions honestly and give real reactions and move forward. But if it's a character, you know, you really want to take with you, then, you know, you get to, that's the benefit of being an actor. Like, anything that you pretend to do on screen, you actually, you know, you take that skill back with you. If you learn to play the trumpet for, you know, for a TV show for a few seasons, when the TV show ends, you still know
how to play the trumpet.
That's a skill that you've acquired.
Yeah.
So, you know, I look at that when I see Will Smith drop back and swing, I know that time is Muhammad Ali. You know? You don't forget it. You spent that much time.
It's muscle memory.
It's muscle memory.
It's gonna click back in. It's just hoping it clicks in the right time.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, it's interesting because you actually, you're at a point where you want to do your own stunts.
Well, I've done my own stunts, and
are we done with that now?
I don't know if we're done with it, but we're definitely weighing every option.
Some of it's not worth it.
Because it used to be, you know, I'm doing all my own stunts. I used to fight with the stunt guys. I'm doing all my own stunts unless it's in water or I'm on fire.
Yeah, you got those.
But fighting, I definitely want to do my fighting. I think I'll let the professionals do the falls from now on.
Yeah. I was going to ask how that goes over in the house when you know, decide that, you know, you're going to be the one to jump through the window. Like, how does that conversation typically end?
Terrible. I always lose. Keisha is not a fan of it. I did a show recently called Johnson for Bounce TV.
Mm-hmm.
And in it, Thomas Jones, who is a powerhouse.
Football player Thomas Jones?
Oh, yeah. Football player Thomas Jones.
Okay.
He's doing a great job on that series over there. And we had a scene where he and I have a little disagreement over his baby mama. And I don't know if you can figure out how that was going to go, but I took a bottle upside the head. And mama was not happy.
Uh-uh.
With the cuts and the, you know, because even though it's breakaway glass, and I'm saying this, you know, just to highlight for people, like, the work that stunt people do,
yeah, is
very important to our art. They're really putting themselves on the line. So when you see, you know, somebody going through some breakaway glass, there's still cuts.
Yeah,
you know, there's still bruises and aches and pains. So. All that stuff is dangerous, but she doesn't even want me. I'm down in the barn. I throw axes. I, you know, chop stuff. She didn't like any of it, but it's part of me.
Is that the Augusta part that comes out in your adulthood? Or is that just like you have this thing where you just want to do something that you probably shouldn't be doing?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think it's a totality. I mean, it's my own personality. I like, you know, being in the woods. You know, we're sitting on a farm south of Atlanta, so we've got plenty of woods and wildlife and everything else out here to play with. So, you know, me, I get to use my profession as a way to play in the woods because I got to be prepared.
There's an explanation.
Yeah,
there's an explanation behind it.
Because again, acting, not being pretending, I want to really know how to do what I'm saying I'm doing.
Yeah. See, I grew up in a go outside and play environment, and somewhere between like go outside and play and me actually being outside, it was a get your ass in the house
mm-hmm.
kind of moment because I was outside doing something like what you are doing. See, you're an adult. I was still a kid taking the axe down the street and not realizing like you can't do that.
Yeah.
Bring it back, go in the house, go upstairs.
And now, so, now we also have a really active 7-year-old here. So, you know, my daughter gives me the, you know, autonomy, like, oh, I've got to put in a zip line just because, you know, Ella wants to be a zip line. And we need a rope because you got to climb. And so we need and she's, you know, she loves being out there, so even more of a reason.
It's going to get worse. that is great. So what's your, being in that solidarity, going from, you know, Hollywood industry, that kind of thing, being able to go home, have that seclusion, that quiet, that peace, that, you know, the woods and farmland typically gives you. How do you balance out life and work at this point? Because you've been at this for about what, 15 years now?
Yeah. Give or take.
So about 15 years in, how do you now balance out life and career?
Well, and, you know, this may be why my wife and I mesh so well, is that there's not really the same kind of separation I think there is for most people. Mm-hmm. So we really love what we do. And, you know, being that I've always, like, the kinds of things that I'm doing, I've always done to some extent. And she's, mm-hmm. you know, been doing it her whole life. There's not really that separation of what's working, what's, it's all kind of blended together. And yeah. So the cheat code for us is, you know, loving what you do for a living. And, you know, being able to involve the people that, you know, you care about around you. And that can yield some of the best results. You know, we talked about, you know, Melvin Van Peebles and Mario.
Yeah.
But also, you know, Regina and her sister Raina produced this film.
Yeah.
Surely. So, you know, it becomes it's an easy balance, you know, for us. It's like, you know, just more of it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I'm gonna jump around.
We go to film a series in LA, and, you know, we say, okay, all right, we're going on a date across the country. You know, got to tape for a couple hours in between, but we're just taking trips, you know.
I love that. When you get people to go and they're going to go watch Shirley, what do you want them to take away from the movie?
You know, I want it all kind of person.
Yeah.
I want them to take away everything. But what I want them to know is that a lot of the really best people in the world in their respective industries came together to bring something that is historically accurate, meaningful, and yet untold to the masses.
Mm-hmm.
From Shirley, you're going to see this epic journey that blazes a trail for what we can see in American politics today. This being an election year, I want audiences to learn why elections are the way they are.
Right.
I want them to see the processes and the journeys, and, you know, it's not just about being popular and getting votes. There's a lot more to the process, and, you know, and how doors get open, and how, you know, what it looks like to stand up to very powerful groups of people trying to keep you down. And, you know, even in the interactions of Huey and Shirley, what you see are two groups who traditionally did not coexist. But the similarities are the ability and, again, bravado to stand up in the face of oppression and say that regardless of what everyone else is willing to lay down and let roll over, I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when these two come together, you know, it makes a really a pivotal moment.
Nice. All right. Is there anything else that we need to know that you have going on at this point, or to be kind of cover everything?
I mean, there's always something going on. We've got plenty. I'm just preparing for, you know, for what's next, getting in shape. It's, you know, one thing about playing Huey is that, you know, when you're working with somebody who wants to be historically accurate, like John Ridley, the body types have to match too. So I had to get in Huey shape, you know, I saw Regina get in Shirley shape, and I'm not about to let her down. You know?
Right.
You know, now I'm getting in a different kind of shape for some of the other stuff that we have going on. So, you know, I've got a film coming up called Nothing Even Matters from a brilliant writer, Jack Carter. And, you know, the challenges that come along with, you know, changing your body type for a role are exactly why I got into this business. And I look forward to it.
The challenges of changing your body type.
Yeah.
Is something that you enjoy.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I'm challenged by trying to change my body type back to what it was before COVID, and I hate it. so I'm like, you know, F this gym.
Yeah.
Yeah.
COVID was something else. Wine o'clock became a real thing.
Wine o'clock was real. And I talked about people for doing it in the beginning. And then I found myself having midday margaritas and midday mimosas, and just from there, it was just, okay, so this is what we do now. This is life. So that, Sonic, Burger King, Popeyes, had a good time for a good 6 months, and I'm paying for it now.
That food delivery service is, you know, a real special invention.
I was eating stuff that I would never have put my mouth on before. It was just like, why not? Why not get a foot long chili dog from a restaurant? So, you know, life or death, let's go. Hey, what's up, y'all? We got another one knocked out. Appreciate y'all for being here with us. Make sure you share, subscribe to this episode, and follow us on social media at Swab Magazine across the board. And as always, y'all stay blessed, stay safe, stay suave. See y'all next time. Peace.